Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning. Thanks for joining me on the Garden Show. We got our second hour up here, and we got lots of good gardening questions on the line and gardening information coming your way. One of the things I did want to mention, with all the rain we have moving through every now and again, mushrooms pop up. People oftentimes ask me how to get rid of mushrooms in their lawn. There really isn't any practical way to get rid of mushrooms that may be growing in your lawn. They don't bother anything. They're really more of a nuisance than anything else. What you can do, however, if you have pets or young children who are going to get out in that yard, it's a good idea to collect the mushrooms, bag them, and dispose of them. Just on the off chance, there might be a mushroom that they shouldn't be putting in their mouths. So that's about the only precaution that I would recommend. If you're just going to turn your dog out in the backyard and it's been raining a lot and you've seen mushrooms popping up, just get those out of the way, because we don't want dogs or kids or anything chewing on things that they shouldn't be chewing on. So nothing you can really do. There's no fungicides or anything you can apply to the lawn to make those fungal organisms go away, but the really usually harmless to the grass. Indeed, sometimes where the mushrooms are growing, you can see the grass looks a little a darker green and is growing maybe slightly faster. And that's the fungus in the soil breaking down organic matter and releasing the mineral nutrients to the grass, making it even grow better. So we rely on these fungi to decompose thatch and grass clippings and all kinds of things that otherwise would accumulate in our lawns and cause them problems. So the fungi that decay the organic matter in our lawns provide a valuable role in help keeping our lawns healthy and looking good. Mushrooms, when it rains a lot, we just have to kind of live with them. All righty, folks, if you've got a gardening question, that phone number again is 504-260-1870. We've got callers on the line, so let's head back to the phone. Sam is up first, calling in from Gretna. Good morning, Sam.
Hey, Dan, I have a couple of questions. I'm trying to find, your weeds you want to kill permanently, like between the sections in your sidewalk, in other words, to where you're not worried about being too close to a garden. Is there any product that actually works? A product I used to use called Ground Clear, what would do is it would turn it light green the next day, then yellow 3 days later. A week later, it was dead. Now, what the label said was see results in 15 minutes. That was a lie from day one, but at least that stuff eventually worked. And so I'm thinking, well, like everything else, you know, corporate thinking, watering the product down. I went through jugs of this stuff. It didn't even discolor the green of the weeds. I'm guessing maybe, you know, the accounting department or the
Stephen, I don't need to hear about the accounting department, but what I'm asking is, what did you spray that didn't even affect the weeds?
It's called Ortho Ground Clear. 5% of it is ammonium nanonoate, and other ingredients, probably water, is 95%.
Is your question you're using the same product with the same active ingredient, but you're getting a different result?
Yeah.
Okay.
This stuff used to work.
Double check then with the manufacturer and find out if they've changed their formulation or there's some difference. There's no reason why the same product wouldn't give you the same kind of control you know, from time to time to time. But I can't answer that question. That's something you're going to have to check with the manufacturer on.
If there's something different I could use that actually works, because I couldn't get any
answers from them. Yeah, there are all kinds of herbicides out there that you can use. Sam, your nursery is full of herbicides that are used to kill off weeds. Glyphosate is popular, but it doesn't leave behind a residue. Glyphosate, things like Kills-All, Roundup, and that does a very good job of killing off whatever vegetation you might have growing in the cracks there. However, it doesn't leave behind any kind of protective residue, and over time, weeds will begin to grow back in that area again, and you'll have to retreat. There are products that say extended control, so you could look for something like Roundup Extended Control. That has glyphosate in it, but also has herbicides that leave behind a residue that helps prevent weed seeds from germinating and the plants from growing back in that area. So what you're looking for are products that have extended control on their label to give you as long a control as possible. You still have to reapply them periodically. There's nothing that will wipe out the plants in an area and the plants will never come back again. But at least you won't have to apply it, you know, every month or two the way you might with some other products.
Yeah, and also another question I have. Have you ever, I'm not sure the proper name for it, but it's called a tulip tree. Is that something you're familiar with?
That common name is applied to a couple of different trees, but our native tulip tree is a really large growing tree, has an odd-shaped leaf and produces a pretty flowers, a little orange and green flowers. Is that the tulip tree that you're talking about?
I don't know, because it was given to us. We put it into the ground with some garden soil and everything, so it'd get plenty of water and nutrient and all that. And it's
yeah, they're not really well adapted to the New Orleans area, so we rarely plant. That's why you're not familiar with the tulip tree. We rarely plant tulip trees in the New Orleans area. They tend to have problems with the high water table. They get leaf spot diseases, and that's why you don't see them around New Orleans very much. They're not the best tree, a shade tree for our area.
When they're very small, what would be the rate of growth if we get some average rain, if they're very small, like 18 inches high is what it's starting out to be?
Sam, I can't tell you how fast that tree is going to grow.
No, on the average, I mean, it's...
I can't tell you on the average. Every tree is different and every growing condition is different. So it will grow as fast as it can grow with your care and under the growing conditions where you planted it. They're relatively fast-growing trees. It's not like it's still going to be 2 feet tall, you know, 5 years from now. But again, do think carefully about a tree before you let it get big and it begins to be an issue, you might need to reconsider. It'd be easy to correct a mistake you made right now. When the tree's small, the mistake will be harder to correct when the tree's 30 feet tall.
Yeah. No, it's got plenty of space to grow. It's out in the open, so it's got plenty of yard for itself.
It's not a matter of space, Sam. It's a matter of adaptability. Again, you've planted a species that's not well adapted to where you live, and that's an issue that you need to think about.
Okay, then. All right. Okay, Dan. Thank you, Dan.
Sure thing, Sam. Y'all, planting trees is one of the most important decisions we make. When we invite a tree into our yard, we're inviting a huge growing plant that's going to have a profound effect on everything around it as the years go by. Because this is such an important decision, I would never just take a tree and plant it in my yard because somebody gave it to me. It's a very ill-considered way to choose trees and plant trees in your yard. You should plant a tree after you firmly identify that we really need to have a tree in this location for whatever reason, shade, because it's pretty, the block of view, whatever it is. And then you need to very carefully decide what kind of a tree would be suitable that would fit your needs and have the characteristics you want. Again, this is a very important decision that should be well thought out and considered and never really done spur of the moment because you kind of get handed something. That's where we lead into some issues and problems over time. All righty, folks, that's my little soapbox for a second. Y'all, stay tuned. Got to take a quick break. If you're holding on the phone, y'all hang in there because you know your questions are important to me. If you want to call in, 504-260-1870. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on the Garden Show. If you've got a gardening question, do feel free to call on in. I'd be happy to help you out. Let's head to the phones. We have Stephen calling in from Madisonville. Stephen, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dan. How are you today?
Real good. What can I do for you?
Good. So over the past 4 or 5 years, I've grown some jalapeno plants, and I do normally just get one plant, and I plant it in like a 5-gallon bucket. I've had mixed results over the years, but the one thing that's remained consistent is that they're never hot. So I'm trying to find out if there's maybe a different variety or if you might know why they're never hot. So that's my question to you.
Yeah,
sir.
The heat is genetic. So you're getting jalapenos that simply don't have the heat in their genes.
Oh. So it's just basically luck of the draw what kind of plant I get then?
Apparently, in your case, that's the case.
Okay. Yeah, that's
so jalapenos are known for their heat, and so generally when we buy a pepper labeled jalapeno, we're going to get a jalapeno that has heat. In your case, right. However, the plant, this is not a cultural issue, which is what you might have been perhaps imagining. What am I doing wrong, or what am I not doing that would produce hot peppers? Nothing. It's in the genetics to produce peppers that are either hot or not hot. So I don't know why you've had such poor luck in getting hot peppers. But if you love the heat, in addition to your hot pepper, you might want to plant some Tabascos or habaneros or other kinds of really hot peppers that can provide some heat to your cooking that the jalapenos aren't providing for you. Just to have a backup if your jalapenos turn out to be mild. And jalapenos have been bred to be mild. People don't want super hot jalapenos, and so there are a lot of jalapenos that have been bred to be milder, none sweet, but some have been bred to be milder. But again, this is not cultural. This is genetic.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your information very much, and have a great day.
So welcome, Stephen. Thanks for the call. Joe is calling in from New Orleans. Hey, Joe, good morning. Let's move on to Gar. Gar is in Lakeview. Hey, Gar, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. Not necessarily a gardening question, but I grew up in Gentilly. I've been living in Lakeview the last 25 years. All I ever saw growing up in my yard and gardening were the chameleon-type lizards, the green ones that change colors. Over the past few years, I've been seeing fewer and fewer of those, and this lizard I've never seen before, it looks kind of prehistoric. It's brown, kind of spotty, and this past year, I've not seen one chameleon in my garden. It's not a problem. I was just wondering if anyone else has that same phenomenon, and have you ever heard anything about that?
The green lizard that we're also familiar with is the green anole. What's moved into our area a number of years ago, this isn't new, it's been around quite a while, is another species called the brown anole lizard. And it is aggressive. And so the brown anoles have taken over the lower areas where we mostly would see them, and the green anoles have migrated more to higher areas. So mostly they're not usually gone, but they're just not where we can see them as clearly anymore. Fortunately, both of them are excellent predators on insects. And so the benefit that the green anole provides for us as gardeners is also provided by the brown anole. So that's a good thing.
Oh, good to know. Well, thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Gar. Appreciate the call. James calling in from Gentilly. James, good morning. Hello, James. Are you still with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hello? James, I sure can. What can I do for you this morning?
Dan, I have a lawn problem. Up until last year, I had a St. Augustine lawn that's in my backyard. And last spring, probably late spring, I used some weed and feed to get rid of some miscellaneous weeds. But since that time, there's another grass that has taken over about 60% of my lawn. It's a thinner blade grass, maybe about 1/8 of an inch, as opposed to the broader leaf grass. And it grows a lot faster than the broader leaf. So I have two questions. One, does weed and feed normally have grass seeds mixed in that might have made the grass a bit, the lawn a bit lusher? And secondly,
No, James, there would be no reason to put for a manufacturer to put weed seeds in a weed and feed product.
I didn't mean weed seeds, grass seeds.
Well, it's a weed. You don't want it, do you?
No,
so
I
it's
don't.
A weed. Yeah, it's a weed. So they don't put grass seeds or weed seeds or any kind of seeds into a weed and seed. It's a fertilizer with a herbicide. That's all it is. So the herbicide might have damaged the St. Augustine, could have weakened it, and that could have allowed this other species to move in, and it's just been aggressively taking over. If you want to reclaim your St. Augustine, you have a huge job ahead of you. What you'd want to do is kill off all of the grass in the backyard, remove, rake out all the dead grass, and then buy pallets of new St. Augustine sod and lay the St. Augustine sod over the area. That would be a way of reclaiming your St. Augustine lawn under the circumstances. It's very difficult to take grassy weeds out of St. Augustine, so I'm not sure there'd be a selective herbicide. And even if there was, 60% of your lawn would die. If you applied something that killed this new grass, you'd lose most of your lawn. So that's why I'm saying at this stage of the game, it's really too late to look at, well, what can we do about the weed? At this point, we've got to take everything out and start over again with a new fresh St. Augustine lawn. That would be the way to go that. Or you can say to yourself, well, I'll just mow what's there. You know, it's green. It's a grass. I can mow it, and it's a lawn. So, hey, I'd rather just mow what's there than start all over again. And that's certainly a decision you could make as well.
Okay. So this is a weed and not just a regular grass.
A regular grass you don't want is a weed. A weed is simply a plant growing where you don't want it to be. You don't want whatever that is to be in your lawn. So it's evil, whatever it is. Even if it was something somebody else might want in your lawn, you don't want it. So it's a weed that you need to deal with and control, or you need to live with.
Okay, I got you. Hey, well, Dan, thanks. I got a big decision to make, looks like.
All right, James. If it was me, I would just mow it.
Well, that's what I've been doing so far. And it's really not a bad-looking thing. It's just not what I really wanted.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's going to take some thought on your part.
Yeah. Okay, well, again, thanks a lot, Dan. I appreciate you. Love your show.
James, appreciate the call. You know, your callers make my show happen. All righty, folks, speaking of something happening, we got the news break coming up. I wanted to remind you all, we've been talking about lawns a lot. We're at the time you can fertilize your lawn again if you want to. St. Augustine, Bermuda, Zoysia can all be fertilized here in the midsummer period. If you want your grass to grow faster or you need to stimulate its vigor, you could do that right now. Just use a lawn fertilizer following label directions. No weed and feeds. All righty, folks. The CBS News update is coming up at 31 after. We'll catch you up on the news. And then after we have that break, we'll be back with more of your calls and more of the Garden Show. Stay tuned. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you've got a gardening question, I'll be sure happy to help you out. 504-260-1870 is that number to call. Caroline, calling in from New Orleans. You're the next caller up. What can I do for you?
Thank you for taking my call this morning, Dan. Good morning. I have two subjects. One of them, I have a large raised garden bed where I have a sun gold tomato plant that has been very prolifically producing, and it still is, but when it starts to slow down, my question is, should I cut it back, put some shade cloth over it, and try to get it through the heat of the summer to get a fall crop, or should I just pull it up and plant a new tomato?
You could do either, Caroline.
Okay.
That's up to you. Yeah, that's up to you. We normally plant fresh tomatoes. Transplants,
okay.
Young, vigorous tomato transplants for our fall crop. So if you're asking what do we normally do to plant a fall crop, we normally pull up the old tomatoes when they're finished and plant fresh new ones. And one reason for that is that the old plants oftentimes have all kinds of issues that may be going on towards the end of their productive season. But again, if you've had a great plant, you love it, it's been healthy, it's been vigorous, and you'd like to see if it could go into the fall for you, there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't give that a try.
Okay. And how far back should I cut it? Half, two-thirds, three-quarters?
Up to you, Caroline. This is not something we normally do. This is not a procedure. Oh, always cut your tomatoes back such and such. So it depends on how big it is, how big you want it to be. You know, so just use your best judgment in this.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's huge. Okay. The second question is kiwi fruit. I know you have to have a male and a female, but there are some that don't need that you don't need, and they self-fertilize. Do you know which would be better in the zone, in zone 8 or 8A or 8B? I know there're not a whole lot of them, but I heard that there was one in the Auburn that Auburn was growing. Do you know anything
Auburn?
About those?
You're going to compare Auburn University? Auburn University? You're going to compare Auburn University to New Orleans?
No, I just that variety that they thought grew well in this zone.
Zones are useful, but zones are not everything. We are not like Auburn. I promise you, we are not like Auburn down here. One of the things I will tell you, Caroline, just to kind of cut to the chase on it, is kiwis became popular back in the 80s. They just exploded onto the scene, and now they're just part of our regular diet. But when they exploded on the scene, everybody wanted to plant kiwis that lived in a milder climate. Kiwis don't like very cold winters. They've got to have chilling, but they don't like really cold. So all the Gulf Coastal South and all over the place started planting kiwis. Well, they just hated it in Louisiana. Absolutely hated it. So all the kiwis that were planted at all the research stations to evaluate them were a dismal failure. And so since the 80s, I have told people based on those experiences that kiwis are not an ideal fruit for our area. Now, having said that, now that you know and you're aware that kiwis do not have a reputation for growing well here, you can experiment to your heart's content. That's what gardeners do. It's not going to take any, you know, great amount of money on your part to buy a few kiwis and plant them, or buy one kiwi and plant it, just to see how it would do for you. But experience with them has been our summers are way too hot for kiwis. Go to New Zealand. There you will find the ideal kiwi growing climate. And trust me, it ain't nothing like New Orleans in the summertime.
So it would definitely be a challenge. It would be an adventurous challenge.
It would be an experiment. It would be something you would say, well, Dan said that I shouldn't get my hopes up, but I'm bound to determine to give this a try. So go for it. That's what gardening is all about.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate your intro. Have a great day.
Sure thing, Caroline. You too now. Alrighty, we've got Gary calling in from Mid-City. Gary, good morning. You're on the guard. Oh, Jerry, good morning.
Did you say Gary or Mary?
I said Gary, and then I said Jerry, Mary. So it took me three tries
Mary,
to get your name. Mary, thank you so much for calling in. What can I do for you?
I was curious to find out what you know about red bay trees. I was looking for a native evergreen that has a nice canopy and doesn't get too large, and I came across
red bay. Red bay fits the bill. It's Persea bobonia is the Latin name. Persea, interestingly enough, is the same genus that the avocado tree belongs to. So our native red bay is related to avocados, but it's hardy. You don't have to worry about cold the way you do with the avocados. It's a relatively small growing tree, peaks out at about 25, maybe 30 feet. Evergreen, so it's a nice smaller growing evergreen. The leaves have been used by Cajuns in particular as a bay substitute. You can't do that with everything that has the word bay in its name, but with this particular tree, Persea bobonia, you can use the leaves as a bay leaf substitute. Laurus nobilis is the true bay. So your greatest difficulty, Mary, is now that you have found this wonderful native that seems like it's going to suit your situation well, is going to be finding it. Like many natives that the public is unfamiliar with, there's no real demand, so the nurseries don't tend to carry it. So if you have a favorite nursery or nursery where you've shopped frequently, if you've talked to the staff or the manager or the owner on occasion, that would be an ideal nursery for you to go to and say, look, when you're ordering your woody plant materials, will you check and see if any of the nurseries you're ordering from, wholesale nurseries, carry the red bay? And if they do, please order me one. That may be one way that you could arrange to get one of those trees, but it will be hard to find, I will have to tell you.
All right. That's a big help. I appreciate it. It's not just me that's having difficulty finding it. It is difficult.
No, but there are nurseries on the North Shore, Louisiana Growers, Jenkins Nursery. Those nurseries oftentimes have native plant materials. Louisiana Growers specializes in native plant materials. And so you could mention those to your retail nursery. They can buy trees from those wholesale nurseries. And again, if you work with them, they may be able to get one in for you.
All right. Well, I certainly appreciate the information, Dan. Thank you.
Oh, Mary, thanks for the call. That's a good tree. I hope you can find it. All righty, let's move on to Rhonda. Hey, Rhonda, good morning. You're on The Garden Show.
How you doing, Dan? I heard about a passion plant that's a big vine. Does it do well in our area?
Rhonda, there are many kinds of passion vines. They belong to the genus Passiflora. The word passion comes from the Passion of Christ. The flower contains a lot of symbolism related around the Passion of Christ. So that's where the word passion comes from. They love it here. Passion vines are typically tropical. They enjoy the heat and humidity of our summers. They produce beautiful flowers. Because they're tropical, some of them are hardier, some of them are not so hardy. But generally in the New Orleans area, most of the passion vines we'll get through the winter fine and be a perennial for you. Check your local nurseries. Ask them if they have any passion vines available. The availability comes and goes with the seasons as nurseries order plants and then sell out of them and order plants. But absolutely, I would say any kind of passion vine you would find locally would be something you could plant in your garden. By the way, it's the larval food of one of our native butterflies, the Gulf fritillary. And it's a beautiful orange and silver butterfly. The females lay their eggs on the passion vines, and then the orange and black caterpillars devour the foliage. So don't be startled if you see caterpillars eating the vine. A lot of gardeners just let them eat, and knowing the vine will grow back. And everybody loves the butterflies. But if you don't, then you can take some control measures. But that's something to keep in mind when you plant a passion vine. It's not impossible at all that it's going to be found by the Gulf fritillary butterflies. How's that, Rhonda? All righty, folks. Well, I appreciate the calls. If you want to call in to get your question all lined up, that number, 504-260-1870. Going to take a quick break, but y'all will be right back. Good morning. We're talking gardening, and if you've got something I can help out with, don't hesitate to call on in. We're going to head back to the phones now, and first up is Dan calling in from Metairie. Hey, Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. Hot weather, huh? I'm having trouble with finding some good plums. I used to love the little Italian plums, I think they used to call them, the ones they made the prunes out of, and I haven't been able to find any. Do you know if they still grow them and sell them in the groceries locally?
I'm not really sure exactly which plum you're talking about, Dan.
It used to be
locally, if you're going to buy plums at the nursery, you're going to generally see things like Bruce and Methley and Santa Rosa. Those are the typical plums that you're going to find at the nursery. Those are cultivars that do well here, but I'm not sure what cultivar, the Italian plum you're referring to was.
It used to be a very small plum, and the seed was very free. And they had plenty of them. And they're very inexpensive, but you can buy a big old bag for a couple of bucks. And I haven't seen them in years, and I was just wondering if they quit growing them down here. shipping them.
Maybe so. I'm just not familiar with them, Dan. I'm sorry.
Let's throw it out to the audience, huh?
Yeah.
Second question, though, was I was interested because of all this bull about slavery and so forth. On the plantations, is cotton grown seasonally, or does it have to be cultivated all year long? Or how did you grow cotton?
Cotton is a summer crop. So cotton was not a year-round crop and still is not a year-round crop. It's planted in the spring, grows over the summer, and it's harvested in the late summer.
And then they destroy the plants and start over?
Yeah, the plants are annual. They don't live from season to season. Yeah, most of our field crops are annual, so they don't persist from season to season. There are some rare exceptions. Sugarcane is one. From a sugarcane planting, they get 3 years of production before they plow up the field and replant again.
Well, what do you think they planted the other part of the season in, on the plantations? Tobacco or something like that?
Not tobacco. That's a summer crop as well. I don't know that there was anything planted for production. I have to tell you, I just don't know planting seasons in the old days in the antebellum South, what that was like and how they rotated their crops and so forth. That might be interesting to do some research on.
Yeah, but, I've been trying.
I don't know that they planted any viable commercial crops in the wintertime. All the crops I can think of, indigo, cotton, sugarcane, those are all summer crops.
Well, hate to put your program on a history lesson, but it was puzzling because
that's not quite my area of expertise, Dan.
Thank you for your help, Dan. Bye-bye.
Sure thing. You take it easy. Appreciate the call, as always. All righty, Jennifer, calling from New Orleans. You're next up. Jennifer, what can I do for you?
Hi, Dan. I'm a first-time caller, and I am a new gardener, and I have 1,000 questions, but I'll just ask one based on, you just said something about it being hard to kill weeds in St. Augustine grass, and I have Kylinga, and I went on the Ag Center website, and I was going to buy halosulfuron or sulfosulfuron because it said that it would work on those, but I just wanted to put a pause on that till I talk to you. And then I was wondering, can I use that on what looks like yellow sedum, sort of like a succulent kind of plant in my mom's garden?
Well, halosulfuron is our leading herbicide for taking sedges out of our lawn. Sedges are a different group of plants from grasses. It's hard to take grassy weeds out of St. Augustine, but halosulfuron does a superb job of taking Kylinga and nutgrass and other sedges out of St. Augustine, and you can use that this time of the year. Sedge Hammer is a common brand of that you may find at your local nurseries.
Yeah.
There's also a herbicide called Image Kills Nutsedge. It's got imiquazine in it. Image Kills Nutsedge can also be used on St. Augustine to take out sedges, as well as a variety of other weeds as well. And it can be used in the summertime. But I'd say the halosulfuron would be your best bet.
Wonderful. And what about in that I think it's called sedum. It's sort of a succulent, like bright yellow.
Well, Jennifer, you're going after your main weed, right? So you're going to use the halosulfuron. So see what it does.
But, I mean, it's safe on that other thing, too. It's safe on the sedum. And I know it's safe on the St. Aug, but it's also safe on this.
Oh, Jennifer, you're not wanting to kill the sedum. You're wanting to save it?
You know what? I might be having the wrong name for it, but, yeah.
Okay, well, look, here's the deal. Halosulfuron is for your lawn. Now, the Image Kills Nutsedge can be used in flower beds around certain ornamentals. So read the label of the Image Kills Nutsedge very carefully, and it can be safely used on and around whatever is labeled as tolerant on the label. But when it comes to beds, you're on a different area altogether. Lawns and beds have different herbicides that we use, so keep that in mind.
Okay, thank you.
Jennifer, good luck and call anytime. Appreciate it. New gardeners are always my favorite. Well, y'all, this time of Saturday is always my favorite, getting to chat with you all, answer your questions. If you would like, I have a Facebook page. You can follow me, too many to friend, but you can follow me on Facebook and contact me that way as well. Y'all take care. Have a great time in your gardens this Saturday, and be careful in the heat. See you next Saturday right here on The Garden Show. Bye-bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.